This is the Humboldt Chronicles.
I am the queen of everything. Gotta be high before I can sway. Light a tea and let it be. If you a viper.
I'm Chuck Rogers with producer Larry Trask. The Humboldt Chronicles is made possible by, and big thanks to, Archaeological Research and Supply, Eco Groovy Deals in Arcata, Royal Gold Soil, and Papa and Barkley. Thank you very much. We couldn't do it without you. Much appreciation. Well, here's the thing. Elections have consequences. We have all learned that. As a result, it seems that more people are paying attention these days than in recent years. In fact, there's a statewide primary election on the way, June the 5th, so be aware of that. On the ballot in Humboldt are two county supervisor races in the 4th District and the 5th District. It's the first such election cycle since California legalized commercial cannabis on January 1st of this year. So in the next hour, we're going to explore with the candidates for both districts the future of cannabis policy in Humboldt County, and we'll spend roughly a half hour on each district race. Here in the studio with us will be candidates Steve Madrone and Ryan Sundberg from the 5th District, and we start with the 4th District candidates Danny Burkhart and Mary and Lyons. Welcome to you both. We should say from the outset that we did invite 4th District incumbent Virginia Bass, who declined to participate because of a previous engagement. But Danny Burkhart and Marianne Lyons, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having us.
Looking forward to discussing 4th District politics and actually countywide as well, because as we know, the board as a whole makes decisions that affect the entire county, not just individual districts. So let's start with the new ordinance 2.0, which of course outlines a certain number of cultivation permits, how many large operations are going to be available, and support facilities on large operations that are zoned agricultural. Given all that, and a question we get on this show a lot, how do we ensure that small farmers around here are going to be okay versus big agriculture? What are your thoughts on that? Danny, let's start with you.
We need to make sure that when we're writing these regulations, we're keeping in mind the heavy burdens that small businesses already face in this county and in the state in general. So we need to make sure that we're providing rules that are accommodating of that. And it, you know, it's great to have a set of rules for people who have deep pockets and large farms, but it's, you need to be able to scale down that, those fees and those fines and the taxes for folks that are really doing it from an artisanal and craft point of view. You know, we're talking small farms, we're talking under 5,000 square feet. You know, they need help getting through this system. It's very confusing and onerous to do on one's own, especially.
And expensive.
And expensive. I, as a consultant, I do have to charge for my services. I'm one of the few that has a sliding scale for what I charge for farmers to go through the process with me based on their abilities and, you know, the likelihood of their project to see, you know, a successful permit. So it's, the barriers are high and we need to work on that.
Marianne?
Well, I think for too long, the Appalachian farmers have been left out of the deal. I feel very strongly that what our future lies in is creating micro-groweries in our region that specifically focus on the hybrid strains that were created from Humboldt County. Mm-hmm. We're trying to do some track and trace now. We're really behind the eight ball. We should have been on top of this 10 years ago. Our Board of Supervisors has let us down over 8 years. They didn't want to deal with it, pushed it down the road, pushed it down the road, pushed it down the road. And we should have been at the forefront of legalization. Many other areas in California were, and that it speaks to a detriment. That's why you see large farmers coming in now and being able to have the money to buy the land. They're like, these aren't folks who've been here for 20 or 30 years. These are, you know, most of the large grows are going to be, very rarely are you going to find that the farms that we've known. I've helped create cooperatives with farmers before legalization to make sure that we have the closed loop for medical marijuana. Mm-hmm. I think that those folks who were trying so hard, I mean, you couldn't get Eureka to allow a dispensary in town until what? Yesterday, it feels like. So it's unfortunate that we were short-sighted at the county level and we didn't focus on what we had to offer. We should have been way ahead of the game. We should have been able to set ourselves up as a progenitor of the entire ideology behind marijuana for recreational use a long time ago and for medical use. So, you know.
Well, just to follow on that, Prop 64 does allow for a lot of local leeway. We know that,
right.
Whether a city or county, whatever it might be. So on the topic of industry, manufacturing, jobs, the economy, will the cannabis industry be a source of new, well-paying jobs in this area that eventually would replace the amount of money that we've been used to seeing this product infuse into this local economy, or not?
I'll start
Go
that
ahead.
One off. I don't believe so.
Why?
Unfortunately, the $4,000 pounds are gone. They're just gone, and they're never coming back. That price left 8 or 10 years ago, while everybody was mishmashing about, nobody saw the actual bottom fall out of the market, and it fell out of the market. And we're not going to see that kind of influx of dollars being spent in our stores anymore. Although on the converse side, we were never collecting taxes off of those dollars. So even if we collect a pittance of a tax off of what's left, that's going to feed our infrastructure. That's going to help us have tax dollars for our roads. That's going to help us have tax dollars for our schools that we never got before because taxes weren't being paid on that income. So on that side of it, I think that there's going to be an increase in availability of tax dollars to take care of our crumbling infrastructure, our schools, maybe put some more money into law enforcement and things like that. But when you're talking about having the excess capital to spend to uphold shops and other places like that and restaurants, that's not going to come back.
Danny, your thoughts on that, and then I have a follow-up to this in general. Go ahead.
Well, it's a common misconception that cannabis growers never paid any taxes this whole time that 215's been in place, and it's honestly a falsehood that we need to stop perpetuating that myth. Property taxes make up 56% of our discretionary funds for this county. Where do property taxes get paid? By landowners. Who are most of our cannabis farmers? They are landowners. So if we lose them, we lose our property taxes. Those are the taxes they have been paying. And there are a number of them who have filed for income taxes on the federal and state level, but under different businesses or other things, because Auntie Iris doesn't care where your money comes from as long as she gets her share. And so people will still file taxes even if it's coming from an illegal source of income, according to the federal government. The other thing I'd like to point out is that... excuse me. The mom and pop growers that do own their land and are here, they are selling their land at a much higher rate to people from out of town, right? So if these farms all start to fail, they're selling those farms at a reduced market value rate, which reduces the amount of property tax we're allowed to bring into this county through the because it's based on our property values.
Let's continue down the economic development kind of pathway here. Is it reasonable to assume, and Marianne, you touched on this earlier, we'll start with Danny this time. Is it reasonable to assume that Humboldt, the name Humboldt, will be a cannabis brand equivalent to what Napa is in the wine industry?
I think it has the potential to be that. I want to be careful about throwing out that metaphor, because right now Napa is experiencing a community where their community exists mostly for tourism and not so much for the community that lives there. There's not a lot of opportunities for young people to have recreational sports teams, for instance, and that kind of thing. And the amount of community spirit and cohesiveness has been reduced over the years by focusing mainly on tourism. What I'm proposing is that we need to focus not only on outside sources of income coming in, but we need to focus on our community resilience too, because the stronger our community is, the more we can attract those dollars.
We're going to get to that. Marianne, go ahead on the brand.
It's a brand. The problem is we didn't cash in on it when we could.
Well, yeah,
we didn't cash in on it when
it
we could.
It is already known, but I'm talking about from an economic standpoint moving forward.
You know, people smoke marijuana all over the country that they say has come from Humboldt, whether it has or not. Mm-hmm. And I think that we do have the opportunity with track and trace. We do have the opportunity if we market our production in a different way. If we're not warehouses out in the middle of Salinas like Harborside has, if we're able to do ecotourism that's around the idea of doing something that is sustainable for the planet and sustainable for the plant and sustainable for the person, then I think that we have a chance. As I stated previously, I think that we dropped the ball on that. And we're playing catch up now. So it just depends on how fast we want to run. And I still don't think we're running fast enough to latch onto that name as well as I wish that we had.
Okay. You get to start this one then. Let's say the Humboldt brand struggles to reach Napa wine levels. What's our plan B?
In what regards?
Replacing the amount of money in this economy that we're used to having.
That's
what
easy.
Do we do?
That's easy.
Okay.
There's a new industry sitting out there waiting.
Which one?
All we need is technology.
How do you get them to move here?
First of all, I go and I berate AT&T because they have taken too dang long to follow through on their promises to give us actual really redundancy. If we could put wind farms out in the ocean and send electricity down on cables out in the ocean, then we could send internet up on cables along our shore just as easily. I mean, I think that's a strange analogy, but because there's been discussion about having wind farms that would send electric down on underground cables, I think there is a way to have redundancy up here. And I think that since we don't have it, we're remiss. We have shortages. Of course, was it 2011 when Verizon, Suddenlink, and PG&E got together and ran a redundant line east to west, but AT&T didn't want to be involved with it and kept promising us they would. I think we live in paradise. We have so many beautiful things to offer to folks who really love the outdoors like I do, who really like to hike and swim and fish and watch sunsets. We have a slower pace of life. The cost of living is less than in the city. I think that we could really attract technology
jobs. But how does
that
pay the bills for an individual?
How does that pay the bills? They work online. I mean, technology jobs, telecommuters are having.
Telecommuters have already been here, though.
I don't think so.
To telecommute for a long time now.
It absolutely is, but I don't. And I think that there are a lot I know here. I just had somebody ask if I could help someone find a place to live who's an online geographer and does her GIS online. Where is the best place to live with the best, capabilities as far as that? But I think we spend a lot of time thinking industry means using up our resources, and it doesn't have to. I see more and more technology moving to this area, actually.
Danny, if legalization doesn't or isn't able to replace the amount of money that we're used to having in this economy from black market cannabis, what's plan B?
I don't think cannabis is going to be the savior that people want it to be. I think that we need to rely on diversifying our economy. We can't put all our eggs in one basket. We spent enough time doing that already, and we're not getting very far. We're jumping over dollars to pick up pennies. And we really need to be focused on our other industries that we have available to us here and recruiting.
Like what?
Like Wing Inflatables and other businesses that are based here that if we can get our deep water port functioning again, where we can do minimal shipping out of there that supports the economy here, we can get our goods and services out of the county.
Shipping what products?
Things that are being produced by Wing Inflatables, our local cheese producers, our local craft cannabis producers, our local craft wineries. You know, we have a lot to offer that's existing here. We need to be able to give them the tools and resources to reach a broader market. If we reach a broader market, we not only increase the reputation of Humboldt County as a whole for a place where, you know, we have the agrarian ideal. We have people who are producing these boutique goods, these artisanal goods, and we have a lifestyle here that people really do come here to enjoy, and the recreational opportunities that come along with that. There's a lot there that, like Marianne says, without exploiting our resources necessarily, we can, you know, gear up for other things.
Can I respond to that?
Yeah, sure.
First of all, Wing Inflatables is awesome, but they're almost fully contracted to the armed services. I've already contacted them to talk about if they knew of who I could reach out to help provide tents or other kind of semi-permanent structures if we had a campground for the homeless. So they're not going to grow much bigger in our area. I've already been in conversations with them. Also, we need to remind ourselves that if we're dredging out the port to ship stuff out, we're not going to produce enough stuff. So the idea behind that is that ships can land here a half hour earlier and take off to take goods to other areas. I don't think that that's going to do much to help our natural resources.
You have anything else on that, Danny? We're going to take a break here real quick, but go ahead.
I think utilizing the port is one of the best options we have, and it can be done in a sustainable and environmentally friendly way.
We are just getting started here. A little bit later, we'll be including your calls and comments. You're listening to the Humboldt Chronicles. We're going to continue our conversation in just a minute. But first, a reminder that if you want to reach us, we're at 707-76-5946, or you can shoot us an email at studio@Humboldt Chronicles. We'll be back with more from the 4th District right after this. Welcome back to the Humboldt Chronicles. We're continuing our conversation now with candidates for Humboldt County Supervisor in the 4th District, Danny Burkhart and Mary Ann Lyons. And once again, thank you guys for being here. This is an important discussion, obviously, in this area. And one thing I want to ask to both of you right now is, does the legal commercial cannabis industry provide some opportunities for us to repurpose maybe vacant buildings? Your district includes a lot of Eureka, the city of. Does it give us an opportunity to think about how to repurpose some of the vacant buildings or some of the vacant lots or sort of like an urban renewal kind of thing like that? Danny?
Yes, definitely. There's huge opportunity for urban renewal with cannabis, but it needs to be balanced with other kinds of businesses that come in. We need to encourage a balance of businesses in our district and in our county, because once the market sorts itself out, we don't want to just be left with another round of vacancies that we have to fill. And, you know, it's one of those things you hope that as many as possible make it through the system, but you know that many won't. Mm-hmm. Because of the expense, the hurdles.
I think one of the dispensaries in Arcata right now is thinking about opening a second location in Eureka in a vacant, what is it, bank building or something like
that? Yes, what used to be the old Bank of America building.
Bank of America, right. Yeah. Marianne, go ahead.
So it's already been happening. We've got dirt companies out on the peninsula. Mm-hmm. The peninsula was almost all brownfield. So there's been some reclamation of those areas that have had, you know, waste dumps left behind. When industries left, they left their crap behind, literally, you know, oils and debris. So that's already been happening for the last 10, 15 years already. I mean, Fox Farm is known all around the world. Humboldt Nutrients is known all around the world. I can say, you know, Steve Keeter, who started North Coast Horticultural Supply, has been able to create international contracts. So in other areas besides just the marijuana, we're really well known for the dirt that we,
soil.
Excuse me, not dirt, soil. My son's a geographer. I can hear him going, "Mom, the difference between dirt and soil." So there's a so that's already happening, and reclaiming the any time a shop moves out and it's sitting empty. But I think to the benefit has been what we've seen happening on the Samoa Peninsula, definitely, where we see some of the industry being taken up by something that is not harmful to the environment.
All right, here's a hypothetical situation for you. And let's see, Danny, you started the last one. Marianne, you can start this one.
Sure.
Hypothetical situation. Let's say that I'm a business person in the cannabis industry. Maybe I'm a cultivator. Maybe I produce some sort of equipment that's used in the industry. But whatever it is, I'm going over my finances, and I see that I'm paying a lot of money in transportation costs to get whatever it is I produce here to the larger markets, whether that's the Bay Area or Sacramento or Los Angeles or wherever it is. I'm spending a significant amount of money on transportation. So I think, you know, if I could reduce that cost, then I could either put that money in my pocket, give my employees needed raises, or reinvest that into the infrastructure of my company if I moved closer to the larger market. Why wouldn't I do that? Convince me to stay here and keep paying transportation costs to the larger markets.
It's going to cost you more to live in a larger market. I mean, I have a friend who lives in Berkeley, pays $3,400 a month for a two-bedroom house. So,
what if I didn't need to be in this? What if I could be, you know, within 25, 30 miles, 40 miles or so, instead of 5.5 hours away?
it's still going to cost you more. The cost of living is just going to be more. Our gas prices are higher up here, but you can't beat our food. You can't beat our beauty.
What about the time it takes me to restock my clients in that area? Well, like 30 minutes instead of 5.5 hours.
I don't know. I moved up here on purpose because I think it's paradise. I would rather be here and pay someone to do the traveling for me.
Mm-hmm. Danny?
I think we're looking at it from that approach. The economies of scale for transportation aren't there, and it is an incentive for much larger operations to move closer to the larger areas that are where the markets are. One of the things I think that benefits us is that, you know, we need to recognize that it's not all about quantity. It's about quality. And that's what we have to offer here. And if we keep offering that quality and we play that up with marketing and smart tourism strategies and smart taxation policy, then we really have a shot at the bigger markets. And transportation can be dealt with. Those costs can be dealt with by small farmers banding together and using, you know, similar transportation contracts or companies, working deals as much as possible. There's a lot of opportunity there. It's about, you know, where do we focus? What is our target market? I don't think our target market is to be the Marlboro of cannabis. Our target market is to be the Ferraro Caranis of the market, to be the, you know, the high, beautiful, high-end boutique product.
I don't think that the cannabis that was created in Humboldt County was meant to be mass-produced. Quite honestly, it was such a labor of love for those people who spent all those years, you know, loving it, you know, and creating what we now have today on the markets.
So, do you think there's a large enough percentage of the client market out there that will pay a premium price?
Absolutely, they already do. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have friends who are still selling their product to niche markets. Absolutely. It's like, are you going to, you know, kind of what Danny referred to, are you going to drink a bottle of Bud, or are you going to have a nice micro brewery beer?
Well, I think most people do a little bit of both.
Exactly.
Depending upon the occasion.
And that's okay.
That's why Napa works. You know, not everybody wants to pay for a good bottle of Napa wine all the time, but on certain occasions
Absolutely.
They will. Other times, they'll go to Trader Joe's and pick up a
two-buck chuck.
Exactly. Yeah. So... that seems to me to be the quandary, right, Danny? That's a direction we need to think about and go toward. Is that right?
Definitely. We need to focus on our best attributes and highlight those and get them out to the market. Marianne's completely correct when she says we haven't done enough to market what we've got here, and we're behind the curve.
Who's supposed to do that?
Well, right now, we have a very highly respected visitors bureau that is supposed to handle these things, and what they have come up with is a separate but equal, their words not mine, cannabis marketing plan, where they intend to separate the marketing of our cannabis offerings from the normal tourism site that we already have, the redwoods.info site that drives our, you know, the Lonely Planet recognition is on there, and it focuses mainly on our redwoods. Instead of, you know, and we're also not targeting the right markets either. Right now, the marketing plan is for 55 and older. We have so much more to offer to all ages
that makes no
we're
sense.
Not taking advantage of in our market.
Which makes no sense when you figure the median age of Eureka residents is 35 to 45 now.
Right.
So we're not absolutely, and it's okay to not market them together, but I think that, again, we dropped the ball. And I don't know, you know, it's going to take a lot. I think that our county board of supervisors should have been fighting for our rights a long time ago at the state level. I think that we should have not been afraid. Remember when we were don't put in the dispensaries after all in Eureka because the letter the feds are going to write us the letter. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, we should have stood tall and we should have said no, we're going to put these in. We'll let the state of California defend us. We should have been stepping up to the plate years ago instead of balking and having this mentality that we had, that, you know, made it very difficult for growers to come out into the light once it was legal. And it's still being treated as a separatist thing. They're not allowed to come into the light very well yet.
Is that something the board can take up? Like, if let me just ask both of you, if you were to get the fourth seat on the Board of Supervisors, is that something that you would push for, that you would advocate for?
I would advocate for a change in the relationship. I think of a lot of our problems, what we're seeing, the language that comes out of our elected leaders is not a message of compassion. It's a message of, well, you had it so good for so long, and, you know, welcome to real life. And it's like, well, I'm sorry, it's not real life yet, because a lot, there's not public banking. There's not banking at all for cannabis industry, unless you're really lucky and you have that figured out.
Oh boy, we did a whole show on that. That's a
huge
issue.
And that's a whole issue on its own. Yeah. And so you're expecting businesses that are just now starting up to be like existing businesses that have had, you know, regulations in place for 100 or more years, mm-hmm. and it's like asking a toddler to run a marathon.
Yeah.
You know, they just started learning now to walk, and you're mm-hmm. going to tell them to go run 26 miles.
Right. Go ahead. Last thought, then we're going to move on to the fifth district. Go ahead.
Yeah, we need to recognize also that they can't deduct any expenses. They can't deduct anything yet. So it's everything.
So true.
But it's the same kind of thing that happened, the downturn in the timber industry, the downturn in the fishing industry, as people started seeing that, wow, they are cutting every dang tree down. Every damn tree is being cut down.
We need to start taking this seriously.
We need to take it seriously and have regulations. And so, no, we're never going to have, we have 1% of our redwoods left. We're never going to have all that again.
Right.
Same with the fishing industry. Half the time you can't, you know. So same thing has happened with marijuana in our culture, or cannabis.
But we have just scratched the surface, but now we need to move on to the 5th District. Danny Burkhardt and Marianne Lyons, candidates for the 4th District seat, Humboldt County Supervisors. Thank you so much for this discussion. We could go on for 2 hours at least
easily.
On this.
We'd be glad to. MarianneLyons.com, MarianneLyons. Please send me questions, and invite me back anytime.
And your website?
Danny, for the number 4, supervisor.com, and you can find most of my platform there, and an easy way to submit questions.
I think you're both on Facebook as well, is that
yep,
right?
Yep, indeed.
Yeah. Okay,
absolutely.
Good. Best of luck to both of you, and thanks for the time. This was a great discussion.
All right, have a great
evening.
Thank
you so much for having us.
His voice sounds this cool in real life, too, you guys.
We want to thank our 4th District candidates, Danny Burkhardt and Marianne Lyons. Thanks for making the time to talk with us today. We're going to take a short break and be back with the 5th District candidates in just a moment. And a reminder, if you want to weigh in, 707-786-5946 or studio at HumboldtChronicles.com. Back in just a moment. You're listening to the Humboldt Chronicles. Moving our discussion now to Humboldt County 5th District. Candidates for supervisor there are Steve Madrone and incumbent Ryan Sundberg. Welcome to you both. Thanks for being here in the studio with us. Looking forward to this discussion.
Thanks for hosting us.
Thanks for having us.
Let's start with the 5th District. We were just talking during that commercial break about just the size of the 5th District is roughly half the county. Is that right?
Yes. Pretty dang close.
Pretty close to that.
Yeah, just under.
And it's a varied kind of district in that you have a little bit of urban area, but then you have far-flung rural areas. So there's a lot going on. Let's just start, given the size of that, I'd like to start with the environment. And the recent, what's on a lot of people's mind with regard to the 5th District was the Mercer-Fraser application, which has been withdrawn. We should say that. Is locating an industry like that along our drinking water supply a good or a bad idea in the first place? Ryan, go ahead.
Yeah, it was tough because what we did was we chose to do heavy industrial and thought that would be a no-brainer. But what the board did that was smart was we made them all conditional use permits. So they needed to go through a full public hearing through the Planning Commission, mm-hmm. appealable to the Board of Supervisors.
Right.
And so the long run, the process works. For the ones that aren't appropriate, don't go forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I was happy with how that all turned out because our community does need to have a conversation about what is appropriate, what's not, and because eventually as this smooths out and time goes on, more and more will be principally permitted. So we need to figure out exactly where those are and not have to do conditional use permits because they're very expensive to mm-hmm. go through that process.
Well, let's address, before I get to you, Steve, let's address the rumor mill that Mercer-Fraser withdrew this. They're going to reapply after the election. True or false?
That is absolutely false.
Have you had any discussions with them about that?
Yes, they have.
And no, what have they said?
They've said they absolutely do not want to go through this again and are not bringing this forward again. And I've said that there's no possible way that that's going to happen.
So you would oppose it if they reapplied for that location?
I would not. That would not be supportive of a cannabis manufacturing facility at that location in any circumstance.
Steve?
Yeah, I think that many of us in the community feel that the board made a lot of missteps in the way that they rearranged the general plan, and in particular, creating heavy industrial zones next to our water supplies, next to the river. And it's not just the Mad River project with Mercer Fraser. There's a second project out on the Trinity River in Willow Creek, also at the Mercer Fraser site in the 100-year floodplain. Even if the building's elevated 2 feet above the floodplain, it's still in the floodplain. Near a school opposed by the community service district and all the community. And while that project's been pulled back, it has not been withdrawn. And, you know, Mercer Fraser, if you take their own letter that their lawyer wrote that they sent to the county when they withdrew the project, they blame the situation on the water district and the community for blowing the issue out of proportion and creating an unfair hearing opportunity for Mercer Fraser. And so they pulled it, and in that letter they said, quote, "We're pulling it at this time," and that they reserve a right to bring it back at a future date. So I think what went wrong was creating general plan designations that even allow developers to think that they could do these kinds of things in that floodplain area.
Well, and I can tell you why he's wrong.
Go ahead.
Is the Mercer Fraser has operated that site for developing concrete and asphalt and doing gravel. And so that has been operated as a heavy industrial site, and it's been a legal non-conforming use for a very long time. The Ready Mix place right up the street is the same way. So the general plan was actually fixing that because it's a vested right that they have. And so the what we want to do is, if you give them, you know, they have a vested right. We can't change that. It is a heavy industrial use that they're doing there. And what we do is you can do like a Q zone over it to make sure that only what they're doing now is what they can do in the future, and try and limit that down. But I think conflating the two have nothing to do with each other.
Well, yeah, and yet at the same time, it's true that there was these older uses and vested rights. But the board had a choice to make it ag exclusive for a zoning rather than heavy industrial.
Ag exclusive,
please,
is not
Ryan,
the zone.
Don't interrupt, please.
It's not be the polite. Correct zoning.
Can we be
you know
polite
that.
Here tonight?
Well, as
I've
long
heard
as you
many
tell
people,
the truth.
I've, what, Ryan, let's not go there, please.
One thing I want to follow up on is given this situation, does it alert us as we want to try to make this commercial legalization work and maybe bring in new business or allow people who are already here to expand and so on? Does it direct us towards some sort of future planning so that we don't end up in a problem like this again? In other words, do we look to some sort of general plan for heavy industry, given the nature of this industry, and look for appropriate locations within the county? Could be in the 5th District, could be somewhere else, though. But appropriate locations so we don't run into permitting problems like this. And if somebody wanted to open a project like that, there would be appropriate locations for them already designated. Is that go ahead?
That's correct. It all comes down to sound land use planning and making sure that we put the right things in the right place. And nobody spoke out against these facilities. They were speaking out against putting these facilities in the wrong place next to our water supply.
Right. Sure.
So there are a lot of things that happen in the general plan that are going to lead to more projects coming forward where developers have been given this false promise of what they can do in the wrong place. That costs us as taxpayers a lot of money to deal with those kinds of projects and problems. It costs the water district legal funds to have to fight this. And like I said, the Willow Creek project still hasn't been withdrawn. Is that because they didn't file an appeal? You know,
well,
why not?
It also stalls the whole process,
right,
too, because you have to go through appeals.
Yeah, you bet.
So first I'll say that the general plan has been, the mapping has been done, right? So that's the general plan is general.
Right.
The next process is the zoning, and the zoning really narrows in on what you can and can't do on different properties. That has not been done yet, and it will be coming. It's supposed to be done in the next 2 years is what state law says, I believe. And the Willow Creek project, that one is the tribe, Hoopa tribe, has asked for a couple of studies, and they're performing those studies so they can make an informed decision. And I've told them out there, well, you know, we've got to see what I want to see what everybody has to say about it first, and then we'll make a decision after that. And if it ends up being the same one as the Glendale, then so be it. But I want to see what the community has to say first with real information.
We could keep going just on this all night, but let's move to economic development. And a question I was asking the 4th District candidates earlier in this hour, is there a way that the legal commercial cannabis industry will ever replace the amount of money in this economy that we have been used to over the last 40, 45 years or so? Ryan, go ahead.
So very hard to tell. What I can say is that there's been tens of millions of dollars spent on permitting, consultants, fees, you know, taxes in the last couple of years. And that has really pulled away a lot of money that people have, discretionary money for small shops out in Garberville, for instance. And they're really feeling the impact of that. My hope is that as this industry matures and changes, you know, it's going to be legal money. You know, the people who get it are going to be different, and it's going to be people who – there's going to be winners and losers for sure. And I said that from the day this thing passed. I said there's people who made a lot of money today, and there's people who are don't know it yet, but they're out of business because they don't know how to get legal or don't want to. So it's definitely going to change, but you know, there's a lot of people who are in line waiting for permits and getting permits, and we're getting more out every day. And I'm hopeful. You know, it's going to be a tough business. The state of California has let it, you know, 100-acre farms have at it,
yeah.
And trying to compete with that, I don't think is going to work. But Humboldt's going to find its niche, and it'll be part of our diversified economy somehow, some form.
Steve, go ahead.
Well, Humboldt County did find its niche. It produced the best cannabis on the planet.
Right.
And the brand, as we all know, you can go on vacation anywhere around the world, and you say you're from Humboldt, people snicker and laugh and say, oh, hey.
How do we monetize that in the legal market?
Well, what we can do, I think that there were a lot of missteps on the way the cannabis ordinances were crafted. And number one, the Measure S tax. Instead of taxing on sales, which is the way all other crops are done, this board and the county decided to tax on the permitted grow area, whether or not you plant anything that year or not. That's hurting people dramatically. So we could easily go in and work with the voters and change Measure S so that it was, in fact, a tax on sales. Everybody would agree to that if it was an appropriate level of tax. The second thing is creating a small farmer category in the county ordinance, whereby, say, you're growing 2,000 square feet or less, and you get a once-a-year annual visit audit, and you're doing best management practices, you don't have to pay all those other fees and costs because your grow is so small, you're doing it in the sun, in the soil, you're not taking all the water, you're not using pesticides. If you're doing it right, and we reduce the cost for people doing it that way, even if you're commercial, and create an avenue for the small farmer to be able to once again be able to grow and make an income. Right now, they pencil it out at 10,000 square feet, it hardly covers the costs of operation. So if we created a category for small farmers that allowed very minimal cost to certify they're doing good, then we'd bring all them back into the market. And we'd have $10, $20 million coming in from those operations into the county via sales. What we've seen in the last year is that every town in Humboldt County has seen a 20 to 30% drop in sales, and that's because of the crash of the market. And as Ryan said, most of the money is going to consultants and fees and other things, but not benefiting local businesses.
Well, the state just released its first quarter results, too, and the excise tax revenue was a lot less than projected. Of course, that's difficult to project, though, when you're bringing a product that has been black market onto the legal market, because it's almost a guess. I know that the finance folks tried to do their best with this, but really it was just a guess.
Well, if you create an avenue for people to get compliant and to come forward without such a huge cost of doing it, and you had 8,000 growers like we used to have, small growers in the hills, most of whom were not creating environmental damage. Certainly there were those
there
that were.
Some. Absolutely.
But it wasn't all of them, and many of them were very responsible stewards. And the bottom line is that money spread out throughout the entire economy. economy. Now you've got 150 applicants that got permitted. Maybe there'll be 500 if we're lucky. And the bottom line is that money is mostly leaving the county through outside investors from Canada and other places. So we've made major missteps in the way we've handled the industry. But it is not too late to turn that around.
We got to go to a quick break. You want to respond to that real quickly?
Sure. I mean, I wish my opponent here would have participated in any of the meetings that we had, because we had, you know, a very, very many meetings.
I did participate, Ryan.
Didn't see you at any of them, and I was there at all of them. Anyway, so on the tax, you know, we talked about that at the board meeting. As you know, should we do a sales tax? We don't have cash registers. There's no track and trace. There was no possible way to measure how much was coming out of the hills and into the market. We couldn't do a sales tax. It wasn't measurable.
Would you support thinking about that, talking about
that? Oh, of course, yeah, because track and trace is coming.
Right.
And, you know, once they have that infrastructure in place, that is definitely the way to go. Mm-hmm. And hopefully the voters will vote that in, and I'd be completely supportive of it. But when we did this back then, you know, we were first in the state of California. We had the lowest tax in the state. And we were trying to make it doable. The less you grow, the less you pay. And then on the small farmer, we have a program set up, and it was in Ordinance 1.0 that was carried over. And if you're under 3,000 square feet, you grow with natural light, and you have an organic certification. Then you get into our artisanal branding program, and you know, you can have a zoning clearance certificate. We make it really, really easy. The new ordinance allows for you don't have to upgrade your roads all the way like other people do. And so we try and, you know, we've listened to the farmers from the beginning and had many meetings, and we have their support on, you know, the support of the Humboldt Growers Alliance supports all this that we've done and has helped us with this.
We've got a lot more to talk about. We're going to continue our discussion with 5th District candidates Steve Madrone and Ryan Sundberg in just a moment. First, a quick break. You're listening to the Humboldt Chronicles. Back in a moment.
Did you know that CBD is one of the strongest anti-inflammatory agents found in nature? Or that THC is one of the strongest natural painkillers? Combined, these natural compounds, known as cannabinoids, bind with the receptors in our body to provide natural therapeutic effects. This network of receptors can be thought of as the body's air traffic center, controlling physiological processes such as pain sensation, mood, and appetite. While these statements aren't FDA approved yet, recent research has revealed how these natural compounds work with the body. And we know humans have been using cannabis for thousands of years in medicinal practices and for overall wellness.
Hey, I'm Guy Rocourt here with Papa and Barkley, and we believe in the power of the plant as medicine. Our products are made with a little heat, pressure, and a whole lot of love right here in Eureka. Our original formulation was created by a son's mission to ease his elderly father's debilitating pain. Today, we are a proud team of caregivers, scientists, and professionals with a mission to improve people's lives. Find more out at papaandbarkley.com.
In the hills, it may still be snowy, but it's time to get going. And your soil pros at Royal Gold know how to get you growing. Whether it's worm castings, amendment packs, fresh soil to jumpstart your soil reconditioning, Royal Gold can help. With more on the line than ever, our community needs to stick together. Whether you're starting fresh or freshening up, think Royal Gold for all your planting needs. Their worm castings, re-amendo, and soil blends are available at your local gardening stores. From Arcata to Alder Point to Weaverville to Willits, Royal Gold is your local friend in the fields. Look for Royal Gold bags, totes, and bulk by the yard wherever quality gardening products are sold.
Hi, this is Jace from Eco Groovy Deals. You heard me say that we listen to what you want and that we try to find it for less. You've also heard that we offer the largest selection of quality used workwear for men in Humboldt. And yeah, we carried some workwear for women. But we kept hearing you gals say, "Really? Is this all you have for women?" We spent months searching for the brands that men and women always ask for. Mountain Hardware, The North Face, Columbia, REI, Prana. And guess what? We've increased our women's selection over 500%. And that's a lot. Eco Groovy Deals has an even better selection of the best brands like Carhartt, Dickies, The North Face, Volcom, Vans, Mountain Hardware, Columbia, REI, Prana for men and women for less. Plus, we now carry locally made tie-dye shirts, jeans, and tie-dye bib overalls just in time for summer festivals. So if you want to save money on the best name brands, plus tapestries, tie-dye furniture, and more, check us out first. Shop local and save at Eco Groovy Deals in Arcata's Westwood Shopping Center with plenty of easy parking. We're open every day.
Are you trying to get through the permitting process for your scene? Are you curious about the history of your property? Do you have a referral to do a cultural resource survey from the county? Well, look no further. Archaeological Research and Supply has got you covered. With over 25 years' experience, this locally owned and operated group of professionals will expedite archaeological surveys, assessments, tribal coordination, and get your report to the county. Look to them for historic resource surveys, recommendations, and reports. Get legal and discover the story your land is waiting to share. Archaeological Research and Supply has crews of degree-holding archaeologists available to begin your permitting process today. Call 407-6205. That's 407-6205. Or visit arsc1.com now for your free consultation and estimate. Archaeological Research and Supply, expediting all your permitting needs.
Welcome back to the Humboldt Chronicles. We are talking with 5th District Supervisor candidates Steve Madrone and incumbent Ryan Sundberg, and thanks to you both again. This is a fascinating discussion. I'm going to ask you a hypothetical that I asked the 4th District candidates a little bit earlier, and that's if I'm in the cannabis industry, and whether I'm a cultivator or maybe I'm manufacturing some piece of equipment that's used in the industry, I'm trying to be as financially responsible as I can. I'm looking at my transportation costs to the large markets. I realize that if I moved closer, and we've talked with economists about this, and this often happens, people move closer to the market to reduce their overhead, which is transportation is an overhead. Reducing that goes straight to the bottom line. Convince me to stay here. Why would I not want to reduce that cost?
So what I would say first is, you know, we've talked quite a bit about this, and especially with the industry, and we've made it so, you know, an incentive to move closer into town where the workers are, and in that we have the RRR program for relocation, and then we have the lowest tax in the state, and we recognize it's hard to get stuff out of here, and it's the same for any business, whether you're selling beer or wine or cheese.
Transportation's an issue around here for all businesses.
Yeah, and so we've tried to come up with a program that is favorable, and especially the tax. You know, I think we can, you know, with the lowest tax in the state, and there's other places charging, you know, 10, 15 times, 20 times as much as us, and they're closer to the market. And we, you know, I think one of the other things is we have the brain trust here that other places don't have. Not that that couldn't move around, but we've really tried to make it friendly for the ones who do want to be compliant, who want to come into the light and do business the right way.
With the Humboldt brand in mind.
Yeah, and we've also created a tax stamp for them through the SIPCA company, where it guarantees that the product is from Humboldt. And then that goes on the shelf. There's a QR code where they can tell the story about their farm, how it was grown, what their test results were. And so people know that it's from Humboldt.
Can somebody not from Humboldt use the name Humboldt?
Nope. And this same program is the same program they run somewhere in Italy for cheese, because they have a lot of counterfeit cheese, I guess, over there. But we have the same exact program.
Steve, go ahead.
Well, transportation is a big issue for everybody in Humboldt County, the residents and the businesses. And hopefully we're talking about more than just cannabis in this discussion. Humboldt County has always been big on wood products and fisheries. And those are always going to be important to Humboldt County. And that's why I work in those industries. I spent my whole 45 years here in Humboldt County working to restore salmon habitat. I teach forestry at Humboldt State University. And the forest industry is really coming around to where they're a very responsible industry. They're producing great forest products, clean water, fish, and storing carbon to help with climate. So all those things are important. Our roads have gotten a lot better, but as we've widened and straightened them, they've become less reliable because of landslides. So we have to take a look at that. The railroad's not coming back.
Right.
And so really, we are looking at the harbor and looking at transportation on highways. And we're doing better at those things. So those are important. And I think really Humboldt County's secret has always been and will be in the future to produce the best wood products, the best fisheries resources, and the best cannabis. And if we become become further known as producing the highest quality of those three products and other things like cheese and other things that come out of the county, then we'll be known for that high quality, and transportation will be less of a factor when every product actually has a higher value per ounce, whatever that product is.
If this doesn't work, is there a plan B? Either one of you take that.
Well, like I said, the forests keep growing. You know, no matter what we do, they keep coming back and growing. And we have all most of the clean water in the state and most of the really high-quality wood products already. So we can continue manufacturing and working in those arenas. And I believe that the cannabis industry can be rescued through Cannabis Ordinance 3.0 with some of the suggestions I made earlier, to where we can really look out for the small, high-quality farmers and make sure that they're incentivized. I also wrote an article about how we need to use more carrots in industry regulation rather than all stick, and really reward those good stewards out there. There's a reason all the solar panels are going on the roof. It's called a solar tax credit. So we need to create a stewardship tax credit that's not just for cannabis farmers. It doesn't really matter whether you're growing trees or cattle, dairy, grapes, or cannabis. If you're doing a good job of doing that, why not let people write off the expenses that they made protecting public trust values like fisheries, water, and other things? So what I try to do in my work is set a big table and bring, as Ryan said, all of the information and the wisdom in our community to the table and figure out our solutions.
Ryan, plan B?
Yeah, it's I actually agree with Steve that there's a, you know, this place is a special place. We've got a lot of great products, we have a lot of great companies, and we're actually lucky. You know, you look around at the counties around us and we're doing very, very good. We're, you know, and for unemployment, we're number 15 in the state of California. It's, you know, things are not doom and gloom and, you know, dying over here. I mean, it's pretty positive, though, the numbers we're getting. And the cannabis industry is definitely changing, but it doesn't mean that all that money is going away. You know, it's changing. It's going into different hands. Consultant business around here is going off the charts. Right. You know, so there's other businesses that are doing really well if this the glass-blowing place in Garberville is not. And, you know, I talk to a lot of folks, too, and I'm not hearing that there's 20-30%. I don't think there's been any scientific marker that said that everything's going down by 20-30%. That's not what I'm hearing on the street. And I talk to many, many people every day. So, you know, my view is cannabis is a part of a diversified economy. And I know some people think we spend all of our time and energy on it because that's what the paper puts in every time we talk about it. But it's a very, very small part of what we do and what we support and what this county does. You know, this county, you know, timber products, fishing, cheese, beer, you know, you name it. We have a diversified economy here, and we plan on supporting that going forward. And cannabis is not the only thing that makes all that run.
We're almost out of time, but I want to get you guys' thoughts on another issue that we could do a whole hour on, and that's enforcement. Now, enforcement includes a lot of things. That's the environment. It's also permitting. It's the black market. How do we deal with it's staffing in the county sheriff's department and fish and wildlife, which is now involved, and so on. It's a huge topic. Where do we go, and how do we make sure that we get this right from an enforcement standpoint?
In 1 minute.
Yeah, in one. Well, 30 seconds. Yeah, go ahead.
Is that how much time we have?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, enforcement is best achieved when you provide enough carrots so people are managing themselves appropriately in the first place. And that's why I mentioned that. If we provide enough stewardship incentives for the good stewards that are out there, which is most landowners, they want to do the right thing. And we reward them for that good behavior through a solar tax-like credit, a stewardship tax credit, then most people are going to be doing the right thing. And then enforcement can be focused on that limited amount of enforcement money we have can be focused on those who aren't playing by the rules.
Right.
Yeah, but then they'd say solar tax credits off your state taxes or federal tax. That's not what the county does. We have the lowest tax in the state. So, you know, we've provided incentives in here to be small, and the state is the one who has really opened this up, and Prop 64 made it really tailored towards big business, and that's not the county's fault. Enforcement, you know, we've tried to bust them out in the hills with the sheriffs, helicopters. It doesn't work. And our new approach is we've completely revamped our code enforcement system, and we are sending out letters that are charging people $10,000 a day. We can do 90 days, renew it for another 90 days, and that's getting people's attention. We've got, I think they sent out 140 of them, and 130 of them are in compliance now, or getting in compliance of contact this. They've either removed everything, or they're in a compliance system with the county. And it's being very successful. We plan on ramping that up and being very aggressive on that this year. There's, 2,000 permits are in. Mm-hmm. There's somewhere between 10 and 15,000 grows.
Right.
We have a lot of people not complying.
A lot of work to do, yeah. Well, look, we could keep going all night on this huge issue, but we're running out of time. I want to thank Ryan Sundberg and Steve Madrone, candidates for the 5th District Humboldt County Supervisor. And a reminder to everybody, the election is June the 5th. So please exercise your right to vote and let the system know exactly what you think. Guys, thank you very much for being here. This is a terrific conversation. I'm Chuck Rogers with producer Larry Trask. This edition of the Humboldt Chronicles will be posted soon at 941lounge.com, also at lostcoastoutpost.com, and at iTunes for listening and downloading. I want to thank again our sponsors making all this possible: Archaeological Research and Supplies, Eco Groovy Deals in Arcata, Royal Gold Soil, and Papa and Markley. Thank you very much. We will be back with the Humboldt Chronicles at 6 p.m. on the third Wednesday of each month, so we will see you next time, which will be June the 20th at 6 o'clock.